While organizations invest millions in cybersecurity infrastructure, the most vulnerable entry point to their business sometimes isn't virtual at all. It's physical. The door to your server room, the entrance to the office, the cabinet housing the critical infrastructure and the hardware. Organizations invest heavily in alarm systems, surveillance cameras, complex security controls, but without physical testing, these measures often create nothing more than a false sense of security. On paper, everything looks secure, but in practice, a skilled tester can find gaps that the compliance checklist miss. The door doesn't trigger the alarm. The security camera has a blind spot, or the badge reader doesn't log after hours access. So consider this, the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, requires interior doors to require no more than 5 pounds of lateral pressure in force in order to open. This regulation exists for good reason. It allows facilities to be accessible for people with limited upper body strength. But the same requirement creates vulnerabilities. The lightweight door mechanism and those low thresholds allow these doors to be manipulated. The mandate for lever-style doors instead of knobs creates targets for specialized tooling to bypass those doors. And so a door designed for accessibility can also be compromised in seconds by somebody with the right tools. A thin metal rod slipped under a door can be used to manipulate the handle and prop open the door for later access without leaving any evidence of forced entry. Physical penetration testing identifies these vulnerabilities before malicious actors can compromise and exploit them. It's not about compromising accessibility, it's about maintaining both accessibility and security simultaneously. Today, we're examining some of the tools and techniques utilized by physical penetration testers, from lockpicks and social engineering tactics, bypass tools, in ways to see how they can manipulate physical and sophisticated security controls. We're going to explore why organizations that overlook physical security expose themselves to risks that no firewall can mitigate. And it appears we have a guest.
Hello.
All right, so why don't you tell us who you are and what you do?
Oh, man. Okay. You know me.
I do. I know.
All right. My name's Graham O'Donnell. I am a pen tester at Maltech Solutions. Some might argue that I'm the pen tester, depending on what we're doing. But I run network tests and physical tests for the most part. If it's web, I usually pass it over to Mike.
Fair enough. So let's go back a little bit, because I really want to get into a little bit on how you and I first got synced up.
Because
there was a time years ago when we were doing this security meetup called Ithaca Sec.
Yes,
and I know that's how we first got together and how I met you. But like, how did you end up hearing about that? Because I don't know if I've ever actually heard that story. Like, how'd you learn about Ithaca Sec?
And I literally just Googled meetups in Ithaca. I remember I was applying to jobs and like virtually, and I wasn't getting any because like I was like fresh out of the gate, and I think that like the tech bubble had recently burst, so like everyone was just talking about like mass layoffs at, like, you know, the FANG companies. I don't even know if that's the acronym that they have now. But I was like, all right, clearly I am not going to, like, get past some sort of, like, corporate HR department. So I should probably get in front of someone and harass and cajole and beg, you know, like, whatever it takes there. And I was like, okay, like, what are some security meetups in like the upstate New York area? Like, okay, well, there's an OWASP chapter in Rochester. It's like 2 hours away. I was like, that's kind of far. Which, like, in hindsight, it was like, you know, you might want to, like, be willing to drive a little bit to get a job. But I'm really anti-car. I'm not, like, a big fan of driving as concept. So I was like, okay, well, I could go to, like, an OWASP chapter meeting in Rochester. I could go to, like, B-Sides, but that's, like, not for months, and I, like, need to be employed now. I was working construction at the time, doing interior reno, which was really fun, but it was, like, not cutting it money-wise.
Sure.
And so I was like, okay, well, what can I do that's, like, a little closer? So I went on meetup.com, and I saw Ithaca Seg. I saw, like, Seth had hosted it,
yeah,
and I just started showing up. And I was like, initially I was like, okay, I don't think this is going to, like, land me a job, you know, because it was just, like, you know, a couple guys, like, chopping it up in a garage.
Literally, it was somebody's garage, yeah, that we were just sitting in.
But then, you know, over time, you know, I think just through, like, the couple of months that I was there, I grew so much more quickly. And then it was just kind of, like, serendipitous how you had recently gone, you know, private, and you were just hitting that threshold where you needed someone to come in.
Yep.
And so that worked out. You know, you were like, I need a junior pen tester. And I was like, I need a junior pen testing role. How wonderful, how splendid, you know? So
yeah, no, it was awesome the way that it worked out, because, like, yeah, from my perspective, it was, you know, mostly me, Seth, Anthony, a few others that would meet together regularly, yeah, and a few people that came and went. And then, you know, you were there for so, you know, so long, and just picking up this stuff and being really interested and being, yeah, really engaged. And that's, you know, that's what I picked up on, is just that passion. And even without the, maybe all of the technical experience at the time, just the willingness to learn and to dive in. And I even started, like, presenting things that you were, you know, looking into.
I did. I do remember presenting that exploit.
So that was, like, all the stuff that was, you know, for me as somebody that was starting a business and trying to grow it, like, that type of mentality and that, yeah, type of, you know, approach is what I needed, because I didn't have time to, you know, try and just, like, hold your hand along the way.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
true. I mean? We did do, there was a little period of, like, shadowing, I do remember.
There was the shadowing.
There was, yep, like, I can, like, do CTFs and, like, you know, hack things, but the whole, like, report writing, I remember that being pretty rocky in the beginning. A lot of typos, a lot of formatting errors.
It was more just,
you're so particular about the reporting.
Yeah, the way that you wrote was very different than the way that I wrote, and it just, yeah, took some time for us to, you know, get onto the same plane with,
yeah,
because you had, like, the legal-ish background, right, that you were doing at,
yeah,
school.
Yeah, it was, like, pre-law,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so you had, like, that approach to your writing, and then the way that we were doing stuff with the reports for clients was a little bit different. But
yeah,
anyway, so fast forward a number of years. Now, you know, we're working together. You were literally, yeah, the first employee for the organization. Yeah. And, you know, still going strong. But as we saw at the beginning, you came in with that tool. So,
yeah,
you know, one of the things that we do, obviously, is the hacking of, you know, systems, networks, applications. Yeah. But today, I think we want to talk a little bit more about the physical security side. So,
sure.
Before we break out all the goodies, like, what got you into that physical security aspect?
Yeah.
Versus the, you know, or maybe in conjunction with it.
Yeah. So. I'm glad that you are bringing this up, because, like, physical security is what got me into the security world, like, well before I started doing, like, network and web app, and, like, before I knew what a CVE was, you know, I knew what lockpicks were.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I think especially, like, a big part of my security journey was learning that physical security is, like, can be done legally, can be practiced in a way that the skill set is not just a massive liability.
Fair.
And then, like, the rush of being like, oh my gosh, I can do this for money that doesn't land me in jail. And then, like, also the realization that, like, not a lot of people are like conscious of physical security as like a it doesn't sell as well as B2B SaaS does, you know? So like having to reel it back in and be like, oh, like I have to learn how to run like a network pen test to keep the lights on if I want to be able to do physical security.
Sure.
Just because I feel like it's so overlooked and the market is really, you know, not necessarily lagging behind, but I think that there's, you know, a different target demographic of people who are really conscious of physical security as part of their overall security posture, which is a problem that I think needs to be addressed in this space. But I really got into security through photography.
Really?
Yeah. So when I was in high school, there was a photography class. We didn't have any computer classes, so the closest thing I could really get was like Photoshop. I come from like a pretty small town, and so what we did is a buddy of mine. We went out, and our photography teacher would basically just be like, "Okay, like go take pictures of whatever you want, and then do X, Y, and Z in Photoshop to it to learn about, you know, adjusting levels and saturation and all of this." And you know, some kids would just like walk around the school and be like, "Okay, I took a picture of a locker. It's purple and now it's blue, give me a grade." And, which is fine, you know, if that's what you get out what you put into it, I guess. But we were like, okay, this is a great excuse for us to just run around and get into situations. So we went all over upstate New York. There's a ton of like abandoned buildings.
Yeah.
And so Urbex was what really initially got me into physical security, was like the ability to dissect a building as like a puzzle that you get to explore with your body. Like, so when you're hacking on the network, a lot of it is like above the shoulders, you know? And it's like you have to visualize it, and there are like tools that can help you do that. But it's all very cerebral. And what I really liked about like running around buildings is that like you get to build that map. And once you know like the different doors and locks and access controls that are in place, you're also building a map of the building in your mind, and you treat it as this whole organism. But you're still looking for pathways through it. We would go off to different like abandoned places and take photos, and we got kind of a reputation. But it sort of escalated, you know, from like, okay, like here's a farmhouse and we can't really get into it. Like, where could we climb into like a broken window? Mm. And then over time, you know, you encounter certain things and you're just like, oh, like this is a very old lock that is like still has this like cellar door closed up, like nobody's here. Well, who's gonna know?
Yeah.
You know. And eventually, so there's a elementary school, an old elementary school that, long story short, someone did know at some point. But there was this old elementary school that a bunch of the kids my age had gone to school in, and my buddy and I got in. And walked around and took a bunch of photos. We made a video and we put it on YouTube. And cause a bunch of our peers were just like, oh, like what does the school look like now? Like, what are they doing with it? It had recently come into new ownership. There was talk of like, is it going to be a community center? Is it going to be apartments? Like, what's going on? And so we're like, well, you know, the people deserve to know, you know? And so, yeah,
it wasn't malicious in intent.
Not at all. We took some very good photos, very artful, you know. But we were just like, okay, if you, we put it on YouTube, you know, it's a video of, I'm taking a video of my buddy. He's like, you know, going down the stairs. She's like, this is so creepy, you know, full face in it and everything. We're addressing each other by name. Beautiful OPSEC, really. And then we put it on YouTube and we were just like, oh, yeah, like, if you want to know what the school looks like on the inside, just go to YouTube. So, you know, we hand out the link and the kids, you know, watch the video and then they show their parents. They're like, isn't this cool? This is, you know, this is the inside of the place, the school where I went to elementary school. Look, the gym floor is like caving in now. And then they were like, oh, yeah, that is interesting. Who did that? And not even a week later, we got called out of that photography class. Actually, we were sitting there. We got called down into the office and the sheriff was there. There's like two cops in the whole town. The sheriff was there and he was like, you boys are in a lot of trouble. And he was like talking all this stuff about how, you know, the guy wanted to sue us and throw us in jail, you know, put the fear of God into us.
Sure. But
fortunately, we met with the owner of the building and managed to settle outside of court. So that was all good. The video has since been taken down. But
I was hoping that it would still be accessible so we could see it, but
No. I still have some of the photos. I'm sure I could like I have all the footage. It was just like, you know, it was like it can't be public. You know?
Yeah. So this is something it went back to, you know, school. So years, like it's not together, something yeah. that was like a new thing for you. You've been really interested in that. Now you're getting to do a little bit more of that stuff professionally. And yeah. You brought some of your tools and things today.
I'm going to bust one out right
let's,
now.
Yeah, let's see what you brought.
So this is the first piece of physical security kit I ever bought. And I bought it off of Red Team Tools, which is Steve's store. I don't know if he's like public with the URL. This is another thing. So I bought this to like, this is a latch slipper. You just use it to get past, like, you know, latches that don't lock properly if mm-hmm. they...
Like the little hook latches and eye things, or even more, like, bigger things than that? Like the hook and eye
yeah.
sort of latches? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. You can use it in a lot of different ways, you know, twist. I'm not really entirely sure of the name for it, but there's a really common, like, commercial door latch that's, like, three triangles, and they kind of look like this. I don't know if we can get a shot of that, but I'll come up with it. We'll put it in the notes or something. But you can like kind of rotate through it. Anyway, I bought it way back when to just, you know, to be able to get into stuff. And I still thought that it was like this whole, 'cause when I watched videos of Dave, you know, using it and whatever, he would always be like, oh, like, you know, and we are selling this on the website, the website that shall not be named. And he was like really cagey with the URL. And so I was like, oh, like, this is interesting. Like, it's on the ClearNet, but he's like trying to keep it on the DL because it's not.
Almost like it's something you shouldn't have or
exactly.
should be doing.
Gotcha. Exactly. Okay. And so I still had the impression that like buying this stuff was like kind of shady and like you shouldn't be doing it. It wasn't until way, way after, like after I was out of college, mm-hmm. that I was listening to Darknet Diaries, and they did FC's episode. I think yep. it's episode 66.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, and he was like, he went on there, and he was like, oh, yeah, I do this for a job. And I was like, you guys are getting paid? What do you mean you guys are getting paid? And then I, like, you know, and then I seriously looked into it, and it was like, you know, the core group exists. You sure. know, like, these companies exist. They do it all the time. But it wasn't for years that I thought, you know, because it's like, you know, you buy these and then
they just sit around. You're like, hey, it's something well, that I have and it's cool. But like,
I was using them. But then like the police show up
sure.
for getting into the school and I'm like, OK, like it'll go on the back burner. And then I go to college, you know, and I was like, oh, I don't really want this to like interfere with like I don't want to go to jail. I was on like a pretty good path.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to like get some weird petty crime that messes with my record. So I did just kind of put it down. But then in college I joined a fraternity, and this is kind of the second evolution of it.
Okay.
Where I was building this kit out, because it was like Where I went to school, there's quite a few fraternities, and they all have like magnificent houses. Like I'm seriously like 9,000 square foot literal mansions, six stories. It's absurd, and it's like common tradition kind of to like just as like a bit of like fooling around to like just go and like lift stuff from the other houses, you know, like you go to a party and
like as a prank, like
exactly it, yeah, you just you like leave with a something closet, and... which is like a kind of like a yearbook shot of everybody in it. You just kind of take it off the wall you know, you walk out with it and so again, like I have this fixation with architecture and like the way that buildings are constructed. And I just love exploring them. And I was like, wow, like each one of these is literally a hitman level. And like the police on campus are not real, you know, like, which is not true. They have guns. They will get you.
We saw it as an opportunity to like, you know, test the waters a little bit without being malicious.
Like, I'm going to get every single one.
Yeah.
I'm going to get every single one. Okay. I got to get a composite from every house.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I may or may not have done that.
So it started. So everything started off with the latch slipper.
Yeah, this was the first piece of kit I bought, and it got me into a lot of places that I probably should not have been. And then again, it just like escalated more and more. So it wasn't like, you know, I was like, oh, like it's just a bit of fooling around. These guys have like Medico locks on their doors. I can't really get past that. Like, what do I do? Oh, it's a lever handle. I'll buy a UDT. You know, it's just like piecemeal kind of assembling a kit as needed to get through these, 33 fraternities.
Okay. Let's talk about the UDT. So not everybody is going to know what that means.
Yes, I've got one right here.
Let's talk about
that. That's how I got into the studio today.
Fair. So UDT, under door tool.
It's an under door tool. Yeah. It goes under the door with the assumption being that, you know, most lever handles only lock on one side. So if you're on the side that's locked, the other side will disengage the lock. So you kind of slip it under the door, and then you get this arch here right around the handle on the other side, and you give it a little pull, and it whoop, and that's your third hand. And that'll get you in.
Nice. And this is something that businesses will typically use in their facilities and stuff. So if there's enough space under the door, then that's a way to bypass.
Well, sometimes even if there isn't, I got to find my other toy.
He's digging into some more.
I have them all here. Even if there isn't, you can use an air shim.
Okay.
To kind of like make some space for you. Because this thing's got a lot of force on it. It can apply a lot of force. We got that on audio. If you hear that underneath a door or near a door that you're near, this sound, bad, no good.
I've seen those used for if I lock my keys in my car, right?
Yeah,
like
cars
put something
are
in
common,
there
common
to like put a gap so they can like flip the manual lock to open it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is also really good for double doors that open this way.
Hmm.
Hold on. Yeah. I'm too caffeinated right now. Because the double door tool is pretty thick. If you need to get in there, you wedge it right in and make some space just to get a tool through. You know, if you really, really want it to work. Yeah,
just throw it on the table.
Oh yeah, I should. Yeah. That's keep we have all there. This table space.
Yeah. Okay. What else we got?
Oh man, we're gonna go through the bag.
Just whatever you got. Yeah. Let's see what we got.
Let me see. I guess I did mention the double door tool. This is used to like punch through a double door.
It looks like something I would hang my plants off of.
That is true. I'm sure it's very nice for that as well. You could.
So how does that? I'm not familiar with the double door tool though. So
right now. So the double door tool, you're generally attacking a crash bar,
got it.
Or which is like any, like egress handle that goes across the door, right? And it's like a fire code thing. You want all exterior doors to open outward, and then they have a crash bar because the idea is that like if there's a massive inferno raging behind you, a panicked human can just throw their body against the bar.
Yep.
As long as you hit the door anywhere in its width, you will activate it and you'll tumble out of the raging flames into the strong arms of the firefighter waiting for you outside. So this attempts to attack that. Sometimes there's like a pole in the middle of the door. That is anti-DDT, DDT no likey. But oftentimes for convenience, just for like a throughput, it's like a throughput issue. You don't want someone to swing open the double door and smack their face, or sometimes people need to push a dolly through and those poles are removable, in some cases, but then again, there's the constant trade-off between convenience and security.
Sure.
You know, of like, oh, I'm sick of reinstalling the post. So I'm just not going to. Anyway, this attempts to punch through between the double door, right? It's a fitment. Excuse me. It's a fitment issue. And then you rotate around and you either activate the lever by just kind of, or you can pull back and
pull that crash bar in.
Yeah, pull the crash bar in. And now you are hopefully also bringing the door with it. And that'll get you in as well.
Nice. Let me see that one.
Yeah, go for it. Should we plug companies while we go?
I don't know. They're not paying us, but it doesn't.
That's true.
I guess we won't just for the sake of.
Oh man,
opting for.
We can lay it here.
Yeah, we can lay it.
Well, I already said this was Red Team Tools.
Red Team. Okay, cool.
But that's fair. Right, this is from Sparrows.
Sparrows. Okay.
Which I like. I like Sparrows as well.
Like none of these would be things that I would feel concerned seeing somebody carrying around necessarily.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
They don't look malicious. They don't.
They're not.
You just would look like a crazy person, maybe. But
maybe. Yeah. Here I could be like I'm picking up. Maybe I'm like war driving. I could try to convince someone it's an antenna. But war driving sounds worse than. It's probably not the best pretext.
Probably not.
Yeah.
So when you're out and about, just like every day, are you just constantly evaluating buildings that you're going through
and
just
that's
looking
tough.
For
it's tough. Yeah. Sometimes I wish it wasn't like that because I do feel like there are situations where I look really shady. But like, yeah. Yeah. It's weird to feel like you're casing a joint anywhere.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
I just like there was a new cafe that opened up in my hometown recently. And I walked in, and I'm just like, oh, interesting. There's, like, only two cameras in here. And then I, like, walked. I just did a lap of, like, the perimeter. And I was like, oh, like, there's, like, one exterior camera that's, like, kind of facing in. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, you know, looking at, like, where the POS terminals are relative to the surveillance, what kind of, like, locks they have. You know, and it was like, I think they have, well, yeah, I probably shouldn't like reveal any potential vulnerabilities like on air, but like, I was like, I think there are some things that I need to like talk to them about. I know the owners. So yeah, but it's just, it is odd to be like, even when we came here, I was just, you know,
yeah,
walk to the back, see what's going on, see if anyone will stop me. I think that's the biggest problem is like when people hang out with me, especially if they're not used to it. Like I am testing doors.
Oh yeah,
always.
I've experienced that with you, and it's borderline uncomfortable at times because that's not me, right? That's not
yeah.
Like I'm not the person that would go and do these physical security tests. I just don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it's just too. Off-putting it.
No, yeah, and there's a sign on there, right? It's like authorized personnel only, and then you push it and it's open, and I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm authorized because I'm going through the door, you know? And when I'm alone, I definitely have like a wandering problem of like, you know, I'll just be like, la 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 la, and then I'm like, who's going to stop me, you know? Which is maybe, you know, maybe not the best, but it's not really, I'm not, you know, it's not like I'm doing it in like high security facilities. I actually, a couple weeks ago, I was in D.C., catching up with friends as I was driving back up from Florida.
Yep.
I went to the Library of Congress because I love libraries. I love books. And
I'm already getting uncomfortable.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
And I went. So there's three buildings that are connected. Well, a lot of the Capitol Hill area is like there's tunnels that, you know, you can get back and forth between the buildings in. And I remember walking in. I waited in line. I got there early. I waited in line. I hate waiting in lines because I know that they like there's always a way around them now. And so I like did the touristy thing. I was like, wow, this is a beautiful building. You could seriously, if you have never been to the Library of Congress, you should go, even if you're illiterate, because the architecture is so beautiful. You could seriously spend all day just like looking at the masonry and like the friezes and the murals and stuff. It's astounding. I was seriously dumbfounded, just like, wow, you know? But so I get in.
Right, I think we fast forwarded a little bit. So you didn't want to wait in line.
And no.
You just decided to just walk around, check things out. And
yeah. Well, I didn't want to like be around. I think that another part of it is that I just don't like high density situations.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always trying to like go to areas that are not as dense, which are generally away from like what is publicly accessible.
Gotcha.
Anyway, long story short, I get into this elevator and this lady has a coffee. And I'm like, where did you get that coffee? And she's like, you go down two floors and you go to the left. Well, it turns out that down two floors is in the tunnels and nobody down there, like everyone down there has a badge and Hi-Vis on. And so fortunately, I have my always pretext, which is this is a Carhartt jacket that my buddy gave me. He used to work at Serve Pro.
Okay.
So it's the Carhartt Serve Pro, super rare. but if I just walk around a maintenance tunnel with this, people see Carhartt, they see Serve Pro, they're like, ah, you know?
And probably have a reason to be there.
Yeah. And so I don't want to, I kind of want to gatekeep it because I did end up talking to the employees and they're kind of, they're not very enthused that like the maintenance tunnels are open to the general public anymore. But I did find like the employee coffee shop and I got an Americano for $2 with tip. That was awesome. Lem Lem's Cafe. But I'm just kind of like carousing around the buildings and I explore them, you know. I go over to the Madison building. I go up onto the sixth floor. There's a wonderful cafeteria over there. But it's all like researchers and people who like work on the Hill, really, mm-hmm. You know? So it's like, I was eating at an off hour and it's like dead. There's like six people. It was awesome. but I go back down and, I decide to go over to the Adams building. And this guy, I come to the end of this hall, and it's a four-way intersection. One is the way I came from. To the left, it's like very much like when they have 10 signs around an entrance, you don't mess with it. To the right is a all-black door with like a HID card reader.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, well, I'm not whipping out the flipper here, you know,
yep.
As if I could do anything with it. And then the front was like kind of a... like a blind curve. And I was just like, I kind of spun in a circle like three times, not really sure where to go. And this guy just appeared. And he was wearing an Architect of the Capitol outfit, which those are like, that's like the maintenance personnel. They like do all of the, you know, restoration work, et cetera. And he was like, hey man, what are you doing here? And I was like, oh, I'm just walking around, you know. And he was like, I know everyone who works here. You do not work here. And I was like, all right, you got me. But he was like, nah, it's cool. And he ended up giving me a tour of like some of the like private areas because they're allowed to escort people. So I went to like the like congressional meeting room where they hold like dinners and stuff.
Oh,
which oh my gosh, it was crazy. There's 8 foot tall fireplace with like an opal the size of my head in the mantle. It was like opulent, man, like Versailles kind of stuff. I don't remember where I was going with this story. I'm sorry.
You're just, no, that was all. I'm just blown away hearing about those things and the fact that, you know, you didn't get arrested, which was good. No bail calls or anything like that.
Yeah, true.
But no, the overall topic was just like evaluating those security controls and buildings just wherever
you
happen to be.
Thank you for reeling it back in.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But the point being that I never would have gotten that experience if I just didn't start wandering, you know? And it's like, as long as you don't violate, like, obvious, like, you know, as long as you don't start tampering, mm-hmm. you know, you can get further than most people are willing to go just by, you know, being willing to wander. Because, like, in getting where I got in the LOC complex, I never violated a law. I just walked, like I stopped when the signs were like, don't go past this, you know? Mm-hmm. I stopped there and it's fine. But even then, it's like, the hallway that I was in when the AOC elevator tech, you know, when I met him, the hall that I was in was right next to a vault. He was like, do you see this vault right here? There's a safe door. And he was like, this vault extends back like 40 feet. It's got everything that has ever been written in Congress and the Senate.
Wow.
Just all the paper back to like the beginning. Yeah. And it's just like, I never would have seen that if I hadn't been willing to wander.
Yeah.
And I think that really has like driven my excitement mm-hmm. for physical security. And just like, is because it's like all of these are just like ways to enhance my ability to explore, to see what other people do not get to see. And then there's also, you know, I can sell that passion by being like, if you don't want someone to see this.
Right, right.
I'm very good at seeing things that I'm not supposed to see. So I can tell you how to stop other people from doing it.
Yeah, it's that situation where, you know, somebody expects or assumes that their security is operational and protecting them. But how do you actually know that unless you have somebody try and bypass that?
Unless you let some goober wander around in your building. Yeah. and try to convince people that he's there with ServPro. Yeah.
So any other tools that you brought with us?
Yeah, dude, I could go. Yeah.
Let's break out a few more. Tools. We still got time, yeah?
Okay. This one's fun because it looks like a weird spaceship. This is a tubular lockpick. And we'll bust out the decoder. So this is like a lockpick / decoder for a tubular lock. You know about this.
Yep.
But if you've ever seen like how to describe tubular lock. If you look on vending machines or like gumball machines, there's always like on the change drawer, it's like a circle with a
like a power symbol almost, like a circle with a
notch
in it.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's why he's the CEO, man. those are tubular locks. And so instead of like your traditional pin tumbler or even the like wafer mechanism where you stick a key in and it manipulates the pins vertically so you can rotate, the pins in a tubular lock are facing the person with the key. And that's actually caused some funny confusion in the locksmith industry, because there's two standards for key making in the tubular lock world. One is from the POV of the key holder, and one's from the POV of the lock. So that's a little odd. Anyway, this tool, you push into the lock, and then each of these, I don't know how far these cameras can zoom in. And so each of these individual tines are responsible for depressing a pin, and then you literally just jiggle it, and you the dial here controls the resistance on the tines, and you just kind of and fool with it until you get the actual key, and then you crank it down, and then you have a copy of the key, and then this decoder. You just use it to, you know, so you go pin by pin, and you're like, okay, that's a 4, it's a 5.
Oh, okay.
That's a 3.
Yep.
And then you can cut it. You can cut it. Is that Young Dolph?
I don't know.
You need to cut it. All right, whatever. So yeah, and then you can make a key copy out of that. I don't remember, is Fort and Gem, is it the POV or is it just the depth? It might be what's considered. Oh, it might be the one. Can I see that, Decoder?
Of course.
It might be that Fort starts at zero and Chicago or Gem starts at one. Loosen the dial before you start. Yeah. And then you zero it by putting it on the table.
Pushing it all flat.
Yeah, putting it on a level surface. Now it's zeroed.
You push each one up.
You don't do it. You don't know.
You jiggle it and it'll. Let me see.
What happens is, well, okay. This brings me to my next thing. Common keys, which honestly, this probably helps make more sense. This is a tubular key.
But you just have a ring of just random keys?
Yeah, well, not random, semi-random. But so when you depress this in, you see how there's widths out. So it's not going to push out. It's you push it against the pins and it'll push it in.
Got it. Like that. So you want the in between the tines is the actual spacing that you're looking to get. Okay.
That's the depression.
So yeah. What are all these keys?
These are common elevator keys, cabinet keys, just, you know, fleet style keys. I actually have more. Well, more, and then this is like a DC-30 NFC tag that I've received. And I already forgot the name of the person who gave it to me. But it was very kind of them. And then two cabinet keys, CH-751 and the C-415A, which are, you know, they just unlock, like, filing cabinets and whatnot.
Just like a standard.
Yeah. Well, yeah, common. For convenience and like, mass production, a lot of keys for, like, common, like, whatever, like, that AV cabinet, you know, they're just, like, oh, we put the same lock on it. And then you make 10 million of them and you throw them on every cabinet and then you ship it out to, you know, whatever 600,000 square foot facility needs 10 million filing cabinets. No, seriously.
Yeah.
And then it's like the maintenance guy only has to carry one key and then you just pray that the employees are not putting like SCI information in the fleet keyed cabinet. Elevator keys too. Very important because they let you, if you don't have employee credentials, but you're in an elevator, sometimes you need a badge onto different floors.
Yeah.
But if you have the first responder key, you can just go to the floor.
Just whatever floor you
Pokemon
want.
Pokemon go to the floors.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever floor you want. And most of the time, you can get there and just blow by everybody else who's waiting.
Ah, so just directly to the floor.
Yeah, directly to the floor that you need to. Because the EMT, if the EMT gets into the elevator, needs to go up 40 floors, you know, they don't want to stop at 25, 27, 31 to pick up random people. You want to go right there and start, you know, doing the chest decompression or whatever you need to do. And then this is a fun one. This is a Caterpillar fleet key. I've never.
Oh gosh,
I've never used it. and then this is like a golf cart key. This one I've tried to use, but it has never worked. And I'm starting to think that I may need to like cut it or just use a jiggler. Which brings me to the next. How are we doing on time? How many more of these can I get us through?
We're at 46 minutes, so you got
time.
We got time.
We got time. So these are jigglers, and they literally are just like what they sound like. What their name is what they are, and now we know them. So you just stick them in to a keyhole, and you just jiggle and turn. Just jiggle and turn. You just and that's that'll bust some stuff open, man. So it's like where's my golf cart key? You have the golf cart key, and it doesn't really like this is like essentially a blank here.
Yeah.
It's essentially a blank, And but what you can do is you can take one of these small jigglers, right? Well, this jiggler looks a little too small, actually. What you can do is you can take one of these medium jigglers. These look a little too big. What you can do is you can take one of these medium jigglers. Look at that. It's the same length. You get that? I don't know. We'll work this all out in post. And then you just jiggle and turn. And, like, you know, if the allowance is shallow enough, you're probably going to get in. Allowance being the so keys have what's called an MAC, so maximum allowance in cutting, and it's like the depth, how far away from like a zero or a one,
the pin can be.
So yeah, the highest or lowest. So yep. Like when you look at like Medico keys, they're like. That makes them really hard to rake, because you just kind of want to, right? But, you know, certain manufacturers of lower security locks, they just like, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when you get...
There's tons of, like, variation and allowance in there, so you can get them to bind, or you can get them to move a little bit more freely, and they'll catch on that shear and allow you to turn that.
Yeah. And so, but like, so I have a city rake here, which is a type of lockpick. Well, that I have no clue if any of these are going to make it into the final. But you can see that the teeth on it,
yep.
There's variation, but it's not very high. And then you're hoping for like keys that are almost like, you know, like a 2-2-1-2-2 kind of like there's just no freaking variation in them. And the allowance is really low. So, okay, we've got wafer picks, which are basically just jigglers too. Wafers are, like, the pins are, they call them wafers, but they're more like square. And like, you know, three pins go up, three pins go down. So you have to do like double-sided picking. That's where like the snowman pick is really useful, where it's two balls on top of one another, and then warded picks. These are all from Sparrows. These, the jigglers and the wards.
Maybe they'll send us
warded
somewhere.
Warded locks are goofy because they're like the medieval style, like, you know, the wizard reaches out this like oogly boogly shaped key. Their security is not it's not from like a pin. Combination. It's from just like building a really disgusting plug, and then only keys that are able to like dodge all of the obstructions in the lock plug can turn.
Okay.
And so like the bit there is that if you just don't put any, if you just make a thin tool that can like just go past all of that, it's free. You know, so warded locks are typically like layers of metal. They're made in layers, and that's why you see like those old padlocks that are like slat, 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 and then they have like four pins that keep them together. It's because those pieces of metal are like cut at odd angles on the inside, which is, and then you have like the old, you know, the old, like, or like when you get like a boss key in Zelda, it's like got like two teeth that go like that.
Yep.
Like that is constructed to, with the intention of dodging those metal obstructions and then just turning the one pin that like opens the door.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, it's like an Adam's Right thing, style thing where you just like pull the, and it, you know? And then you fight the boss on the other side.
I have one over here, too.
You brought toys.
I brought a few.
You brought toys.
I brought a few. I don't know where they are. Oh, there.
I'm going to put these back.
1 second.
Actually. Hello?
This is one that you talked me into.
I talked to you.
Last year or year before.
Ye old Hall Pass.
It's called the Hall Pass. Hall Pass.
That is cool.
Now, explain this one a little bit for the people that don't understand
the Hall Pass. I've actually never used my Hall Pass. I have one. I've never used it. because it serves a very similar function as the Shrum tool, the Carolina roller,
okay,
the latch slipper. And so, yeah, it's just the same idea of, like, you reach over the latch and then pull. Or you try to...
Because if you think of, like, a door, the door has, like, an angled latch on it. So it can close one way, it'll depress, and the door will close and click in.
Yeah.
But if you can catch that angular cut in the latch, then you can depress it in and open a door that's already
honestly
locked, if you have enough space.
Conceptually, it's very similar to the DDT or the UDT, where it's like you have a hard and soft side, and so you're just reaching over to the soft side to activate the door.
So that's when you see some of those entryways that have like a metal plate over where the latch is, right? So you can't
exactly
get into that. So it's like a protection mechanism to you know,
prevent that,
because
they were like, I don't know why you would do that. Well, they don't want to change out the latch. But it's also, it's good to have those kick plates, because you want, or kick plates on the bottom. But that's why they sell these. They sell versions of these that are like 8 inches long.
Mm.
So it's like, you know,
you can get around.
You just get a longer rod.
Cat and mouse game, right?
Exactly.
Bigger plate, bigger rod.
The security arms race. Yeah. Okay. More toys. These are we'll get these out. Actually, we'll get this out since we're on the topic of like the hard and soft side of doors. Okay. This is a J tool, which is like a metal casing that surrounds a wire. This is for like thumb screws. So like if you have a DDT, a lot of storefronts have this, are vulnerable to this, but like.
Because it has a
yeah, like you
turn
like
to
the
close it.
The domestic like the deadbolt. The residential locks that have deadbolt, and it's like kind of a wing nut, and you this is built to open those, so you have to stick the tool through, and then you kind of grab the can I do it on this? No, it's not wide enough. You grab the wing nut, and then you turn the handle here, which rotates the wire inside, and then you open the door. And so, like, a lot of double doors have that, either at the very top or the very bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a good one too. I have padlock shims as well. These are still in the pipe. Can I see your padlock? I want to see if we can do this.
Yeah.
We're gonna do a live demo. What could go wrong?
Not a lot of clearance on that one.
That's okay. I only need to get one in. I actually am like, I tried the first time I got a padlock shim. I tried to do it on like a plastic practice lock, just so I could kind of see what was happening. And I ended up like the pressure that it exerts on the padlock like ruptured the casing of the plastic practice lock. So I don't think I would want to try to do two anyway. But essentially, so padlocks have the key comes up through the key comes up, and when you turn the key, it rotates the plug, which has this like fork that pulls in these two wedged pieces of metal, and those are what obstruct like the shackle itself. Mm-hmm. So when you have a padlock shim, you're just trying to get in between. Yeah, there is not a lot of clearance on this puppy.
You're getting in between and just depressing that so that you can lift it up.
Yeah, because oftentimes they're angled with the slope side facing up.
Again, so that you can close it and
get
that to
exactly
to latch.
Yeah. Wait, yes, mechanically that is required. That's a very good point. so you're trying to just push down, and you're taking advantage of that that angle there to like, and then if you do it on both sides, the lock will pop open. This one won't, but I'm sure this one will.
Yeah, that one's.
I'm sure you could breathe on this wrong.
Yeah.
and it wouldn't pop open.
I think we got time for one more, maybe one or two.
One more.
Yeah.
One more. Let's do one or two. Wow, I brought my screwdriver and my binoculars as well. Those are important tools, but they're not as everyone knows what screwdriver and binocular do. So we might cover those later. We might want to do like a whole walkthrough of the bag at some point. This is a hammerless hinge attacker. So
okay,
if hinges are not installed properly, they can be like popped out from underneath. This is if you don't really want to attack like the door latch or the lock itself.
So this is when a door is going to open towards you.
Yeah.
And hinges are exposed, so you could just pop the hinges instead of going after a lock itself.
Exactly.
And just remove
and
the whole door.
Yeah. Which is not very surreptitious or covert or anything like that, but it will get you in. And then another quick one is the Adam's right hook, which is the Adam's right mechanism is not really a lock in and of itself. It's more of like a deadbolt actuation patent. So you it's a way for, if you've ever seen the it's a lot of doors that are like all glass, commercial doors, all glass, they have a metal frame and the lock kind of like flaps out.
Okay.
And it's like the plated metal. Odds are that that's an Adam's right. And you like, so what happens there is the way that, that mechanism works is that there's this one pin that kind of swings left and right. So when you turn the door, right, it pushes the pin one way or the other, and that's what flaps the lock out or retracts it. Mm-hmm. And so this hook, you can, if you just put it between the door and the jamb, or the door and the other door, depending on what you're doing there, you can guide this hook up to grab that pin and just pull it. And so you can put the best lock in the world on a door that uses an Adam's right like mechanism, and if the fitment is poor, you're cooked. You know, so yeah, those are two quickies.
And all of this, we haven't even gotten into any of the electronic tools and components that you would use.
This is, I wouldn't even say this is comprehensive for physical. Like we didn't cover bump keys, you know, that I would say is a huge one.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on, you know, the signature.
Well, this is
that you're trying to leave.
This is
no, it's a deep
crazy.
Dive.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Deep dive.
So let's wrap this up a little bit here. Let's take it back to, you know, practical for businesses here.
Okay.
So you want somebody that has all this stuff to test out your security.
Uh-huh.
See what they can do. See what they can bypass. See if they can break the assumptions that they have placed in the security, the physical security of their building.
Yes.
And, you know, they would want to call somebody like you to try this.
I sure hope.
Yeah.
I sure hope so. Yeah.
And none of this stuff is illegal, technically. I mean,
no,
doing this stuff is illegal in itself, potentially.
Well, traveling with burglary tools can be cause for suspicion. I think it depends on the state.
Yeah, there are states I know that when I've traveled, I'd have to be careful. If I bring my lockpicks just for fun for
yes.
a conference,
yeah.
It's illegal to have those if you're not like a licensed
locksmith.
Locksmith.
Yeah, you don't have
so
a reason.
There are considerations to have there.
I suppose you could argue.
Yeah.
It's part of our job. I don't know how that would hold up in court. I'm not really willing to test it.
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement with you there. Well, you want one
no,
more thing?
No, I was just
you
like,
got
that's
more
fine.
Thing?
We'll cover them later.
Okay,
we'll
fair
cover
enough.
In a different episode if we're coming up on time.
Yeah, so thank you for coming out and really enlightening all of us on these types of things.
Sure.
Next time we'll have to cover, you know, some stories and things that a little bit more on, you know, your adventures with this stuff. But
yeah.
I mean, again, like you said, we couldn't even get to everything today. So there's just a crazy amount of tools and techniques and I mean, just stuff to learn. I you know, you've been doing this stuff for quite a while here. Again, I'm not as educated on that stuff. So a lot of the stuff is I've only seen it for the first time. So
yeah, sure.
This has been great.
Is this yours or mine?
That one's mine.
Okay.
I'll keep that one. Again, we'll get some more of these made. So I guess for now, this has been your physical penetration testing initiation.
Primer. Physical bypass primer?
Physical bypass. Not even
Here's some stuff in my bag.
Yeah. So I appreciate you coming out. We're going to have you back to talk about some more of those things.
And, I mean, you told me to. I don't really have a choice.
I guess that's true. Fair enough. So to wrap things up here, I wanted to, thank Growth Mode Media for having the studio here for us. You know, it worked out great. Danny and Mike for handling all the production here. Matt for, getting all this stuff going. Obviously, Graham for enlightening us on all the things that he's learned. You have any interesting stories on your hacking adventures, let me know. Reach out to us. Love to have you on. Love to talk about some of those scenarios, how businesses can learn from those and protect themselves.
Yeah.
So
also, if you're in industry and you have a favorite tool, leave it in the comments. Also, if I said something that's incorrect, leave it in the comments. I already know I messed up the tubular lock standards about the POV, so maybe we'll put that in the show notes if we have show notes. But, yeah, please, I'm always looking for more gizmos to acquire.
All right, take care.